Mark is a gospel, as you probably know. It's a kind of immediacy, just cuts right to the chase. One of the words that we see over and over again in the Gospel of Mark is immediately, immediately, immediately. He went here, he did this, he did the other thing. It's kind of an action gospel. And so at the very first part, we want to read this in Mark chapter 1, verses 35 to 39. And we begin to see early in the Gospel of Mark the pattern that Jesus did ministry from, the foundation out of which he worked in that. So beginning at verse 35 in Mark chapter 1, it says, "Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, 'Everyone's looking for you.' And Jesus replied, 'Well, let us go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come.' So he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons." And this is the first reading we're going to have tonight, the word of the Lord. We see what Jesus was about, was in going from place to place. And with the Belfast gathering out there and the revival in Belfast, there's a lot of talk about what would it look like and what do we need to do to usher in a real revival, a real renewal of God's presence, not only in our lives and in our churches, but for the island and beyond. And when Rinda and I came to the island the first time about 18 years ago to lead a weekend out at the Belfast Church, part of our theme was about prayer and revival. And then a couple of years later, when we sensed the Lord calling us to come to the island, we had a very strong sense that that was to help to pray in a spiritual awakening for the island. We weren't sure how that was going to happen or what would be kind of our basis. We didn't know how we were going to earn a living. We had no idea. I was only 50 years old, which, gosh, seems really young these days. You know, some of you might think you'll never get there, but you will someday. We just didn't know. We just knew that we had a call to try to pray and to help to mobilize prayer for a revival. And the process of revival prayer really begins with Jesus as he begins to model this. We see this, I mean, you probably have read this before, that Jesus goes off to the solitary place and he's praying. And Peter comes up to try to get him and to get his attention. But the interesting thing was that this was not a habit that the Jews did. They did not go and pray in a solitary way. Their concept of prayer was pretty much of a religious duty. And it was, for the most part, very scripted. Prayer to the Jew, to the practicing Jew of that day, would have been a religious exercise that was something that you did at the temple or the synagogue. So the idea of, like, going to pray apart from going to a service was not a part of their lexicon. They didn't understand that. So Peter was surprised when Jesus went off to do this. And he did it because he was beginning a ministry and he wanted to be sure that he was completely submitted to his Father and really listening to him about where he was to go. And whenever Jesus went any place, he began with prayer. There was a foundation of prayer that he came from to expand the ministry. He didn't just say, okay, today's Tuesday, so I'm going to go off to Capernaum and do something. But he would pull aside and he would spend this time in prayer. And you also see that those times when Jesus was kind of giving away ministry to others, like in Luke with the 72 and with the disciples, it always arose out of a sense of prayer, that they really were listening, they were together. It wasn't rote prayer, it was intimacy prayer. And so the Lord was going to move him into new areas that were important about for his ministry, and it always began in prayer. And one of the things that we learned in our life was when we put the time in, if you will, to pray, not because we felt like God was beating us on the head about it, but sometimes we would kind of sense a little shaking up in our spirit or something, like something was going to change, like maybe there was something ahead that we weren't sure about what it was. We will double down in our prayer just to try to get in close to the Lord and spend that time to really try to clear the obstacles out of the way and listen. And I've always been inspired by people who really devote extensive periods of time and extended periods of time to prayer. Some of you have heard about the so-called Toronto blessing back in 1994 when the Holy Spirit moved in a very dramatic way in the church, the airport church in Toronto. And whatever you think about the manifestations and stuff, we have been following that for several years. It's been about 25 years almost that this revival, this outpouring has continued. And one of the things that I've watched and that Rinda and I really want to credit is that the pastors, John and Carol Arnott, felt like early on the Lord said to them, give me your mornings. Give me your mornings. And they were, I mean, they had an active, busy church, all kinds of things going on and everything. And it was really hard for them at first to just block off that morning time. This shows how dated it is. Take the phone off the hook. But to really spend that time before the Lord with their Bibles open on their laps and in prayer. And really being in the presence of the Lord. And I credit them for being able to kind of pastor something that has continued to impact people around the world, because I believe that they really understand that the times that they need to spend in prayer are the most important times for what's going on there. So I just kind of throw that out there, that there are people that really can do that, and we, Rinda and I, have sensed a similar kind of call for a different period of time in our lives during the day, which sometimes is very hard to keep. But when we do, we find that he moves and he addresses and he guides and he comforts and he encourages along the way. So this business of going to a lonely place to pray, when you do it, you begin to notice and reflect in yourself that the things start to go better, that you have a clear idea of where you're going, and you feel more connected to the Lord. And the second reading is in Mark chapter 6, if you want to put that one up there. It's a little tiny snippet here. I'll just read it up here. Excuse me. Jesus says, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. He had all these people around him, all this need. And after leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. And when evening came, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on the land. And you know the rest of the story. He walks out across the water and he meets them out there. So you could say that Jesus put so much emphasis into prayer that like he missed the boat. So he's off after all this intensive time of ministry, and he's deluged by human need. Jesus is deluged by human need, and yet his prayer times were always the top priority. So he would have these tremendous times of outpouring in ministry, but then he would always take the time to go away and to refresh and to get into the Lord's presence. And I think that if there's one thing that I wish I had learned more as a young pastor was, in the midst of the constant ringing of the phone or people stopping by or the needs that are always there, was that I would be more determined to take the time to pray. Because that would be the most important thing that I could do. And one of the most effective ways to help people was really to come into a place of prayer. And you've heard of a guy who didn't have much of an impact on the world. His last name was Luther. Marty Luther back there. And you've probably heard this, but I want to read a quote from Luther. Every day he devoted 3 hours to prayer. Every day. That's what he did. And here's why. And I'm quoting Martin Luther himself. "For indeed, the Christian church has no greater power or work against everything that may oppose it than common prayer. The evil spirit knows this well, and therefore he does all that he can to prevent such prayer." None of you have ever experienced that, have you? "This is why he lets us build handsome churches, endow many colleges, make anthems, read and sing, celebrate many masses, and multiply ceremonies beyond all measure. This brings him no sorrow. On the contrary, he helps us to do it, so that we will regard such ways the best and think that in doing them we have done our whole duty." Now, Luther's a little savage here, you know, on this. "But when this common, effectual, and fruitful prayer suffers meanwhile and remains unnoticed because of such hypocrisy, then he has gotten what he is after." This is the devil. "For when prayer is subordinated, nobody takes anything from him and nobody resists him. But if he noticed that we wished to practice this prayer, even if it were under a straw roof or in a pigsty, he would not tolerate it for an instant. What matters is not the places and buildings where we assemble, but this unconquerable prayer alone and our really praying it together and offering it to God." And Luther's companion, Dietrich, would say of him, "No day passes that he does not give 3 hours to prayer and those the fittest for study." So he would take the best part of the day and move to prayer. And when once asked about his plans for the following day, Luther answered, "Work, work, from early to late. In fact, I have so much to do that I shall spend the first 3 hours in prayer." I can't say I'm that spiritual sometimes. But Luther had a habit of praying aloud, and he habitually prayed both morning and night, and he would fall asleep praying. That's not like a justification to say, "Oh, good, I can't think of anything else to do, but I'll pray." Do any of you get awakened in the night? From time to time, I do. More and more since I'm older. There's a certain thing that I have to take care of. But then I often lie there and think, okay, why am I awake? And oftentimes, a situation, a person, something that I'm chewing over will come to mind, and I realize that the Lord has given me a shake on the shoulder because this is a good time for me to pray, because there are no distractions at 3 a.m. You're just there. And you know how you try to go back to sleep and you can't? So turn it into something that really will have some spiritual value. So one of the things that we have done, and not that we're these great spiritual giants or anything, but we don't have a TV. And that's been one of the best things that's ever happened to us, partly because we're cheap and you've got to pay to have TV these days. But the second thing is that if we had a TV, we'd probably sit down and turn it on. And then we just kind of waste time, frankly. Now, I'm not saying that to guilt you or anything like that. I really am not. But we have found for our life and the rhythm of our life that's more of a distraction to us than something that really, really fills us up. And so we try to make our time in our home, and when we're just like out for a walk or something like that, more turned into prayer so that we can try to take that time. The third reading I'd like to read is Mark chapter 14. And Jesus is in, excuse me, the Garden of Gethsemane. Excuse me. "They went to a place called Gethsemane. Jesus said to his disciples, 'Sit here while I pray.' He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. Then he's quoting, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little further off, he fell to the ground and prayed that, if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will." And then he returned to his disciples. He found them sleeping. "Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Could you not keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." And once more he went away and he prayed the same thing. And when he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They did not know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." The temptation is to beat up on the disciples, but the point of this is that for Jesus, prayer was not religious piety. It was down in the trenches, fight it out, spiritual warfare. It was literally a matter of life and death. And when we think about prayer and some of the situations that we have in the world, I've been aware that some of the school shootings, as awful as they are, is now one of the big chances. No more prayers. We want action. Have you heard that kind of a thing? Because people say, well, our thoughts and prayers are with the victims. Of course they are. But now there's an anger that's building. You say, no more prayers. We need action. And yeah, we do need action, but to me, it's an opportunity to redouble our work in prayer, because prayer is the way that we take things back from Satan. Because we are calling on the most powerful one in the universe who created all of the universe. And we are not saying we're going to do it. We're going to him asking him to do it. And so he takes back what Satan has stolen through prayer. But Satan doesn't usually just lie down and take it. He will often stir up stuff. He fights back. And we see what happened in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus was in a spiritual battle at that point, sweating as drops of blood, taking his closest people with him into that, resisting temptation. He must have obviously struggled against temptation himself, or we would not have had recorded this incredible tug of war that went on there. And he wants us not to fall into temptation. And he resists this temptation, but only after he struggles. And looking for his disciples to support him in this, they didn't understand anything about spiritual conflict or prayer, and so they fall asleep. Now, sleep is important, don't get me wrong. But when God calls us into some kind of a pitched battle, we need to see it for what it is and realize that our time in prayer is not just a little, circle group of people sitting around praying for Aunt Martha's hangnail. But we are really involved in a conflict there that is going to be won in spiritual ways. And that is when we really get into that place of intercession and sometimes travailing in prayer and putting every part of ourselves on the line before the Lord in prayer, asking him to move according to his word, according to his will. And we said it before, and I've heard this a bunch of times, but when you really start to sharpen up as an intercessor, the saying is that your picture and your name goes up on a billboard in hell. And Satan says, get that one. This person's now a troublemaker because he or she is praying. And so there's power in that. And you can also discover that sometimes when you have been part of a great spiritual breakthrough, when something really starts to move in the power of the Spirit, Satan will find a way to kind of subtly come in and start to undercut you. And so that's when things look like they start falling apart around you. And, you know, you may be tempted to go, oh, no, you know, it's all falling apart. But it's because you have been effective in prayer that you find yourself targeted more and more. So I'm not really surprised much anymore when things start to press in and difficult things begin to emerge and bubble up. That to me is a sign that God's on the move, and that it's a result of how seriously the Lord wants to take us, our prayers, and our desire to really see Him work in people's lives around us. If everything is vanilla and just smooth, then there's probably not much going on. But when there are difficulties and challenges along the way, not that I go looking for them, they just seem to show up. Then I begin to think, okay, God's up to something here. We need to pay attention to that and actually to thank Him for stirring things up, because then we can really begin to address issues and obstacles and difficulties that we have. I remember a counseling course I took early in my doctoral studies, and I'd never heard it put this way. And the guy was saying, look, you're going to come into situations where it may be all messed up, but they found some kind of a balance. And part of your job is to tip the balance and see which way people and issues start to slide. And when that begins to happen, then you know where to move in and help. Or then you can see like where the obstacles and the difficulties lie in there. And I thought, gee, that's you know, you're sort of like sticking your hand in a buzzsaw there, especially when you get into people's lives. But I found it's true. And even in situations that are almost untenable to other people, folks will try to keep the lid on and keep things level and even. But when you tip it a little bit, it allows for the Lord, I believe, to come in and to really respond to the cries for help. But as long as we've got it under control, there's really no need for Him to come and you know, just to do anything. But when there's a need and when there's a hunger, when there's a crying out to Him, then He can move and really address the cries and the concerns and the cares of our heart. I don't know. Does that make sense to you? You know, have you experienced that? You see things when they flip a little bit and people really begin to hunger and to cry out for the Lord, then you start to see Him move, but you also see junk stuff start flying around too. But you have to be able to stand in the midst of that and realize that God is using you. God is using your group. God is using your church in order to effect good. He's going to bring something good out of it. I believe that a church is won or lost on our knees. That's all. Comments? Of course it is. Yeah. On the one hand, it's easier. But on the other hand, you still have garbage going on over here. So what happens if you become the garbage man? You go in and you start to help clear out the garbage. Then you've got a couple of lives that might be refreshed and picked up. But I don't think that we have to search for things to be in prayer for. I think if you simply take some time and quiet yourself in a solitary place or with your spouse or, you know, with a small group of people, and you say, Lord, what do you want us to be praying about? What issues do you want to raise? Stuff comes up right away. I mean, you know things. Start with yourself. Lord, is there anything in my life that you want to attend to, that you want to deal with, that you want to speak to me about? And usually the thing that comes up that you say, oh, no, not that. That's the one where you go, because He wants to deal with it. I've found that in my life. I think maybe you have too. But, yeah, it's not it's hard work, but it's not hard work to know where to go in prayer. And if we ask him, he will lead us, and he will guide us in that. So I would imagine that the more that we are willing to see prayer as an opportunity to draw close to the Lord's heart and to be effectively used by him, and less an exercise that we need to do, the more we're going to find our lives infused with spiritual power. And we're going to see things begin to shift and to change. You have somebody in your family that is off the beam. Well, go to prayer and do that. And do that work first, and like kind of till the soil that way and invite the Lord to come in and begin to move. And then he'll start to tell you what to do. You know, action steps on that. And I believe that will be, you'll begin to see results along the way. Maybe messy for a while, but you'll begin to see results. And the same for the church. You know, Lord, what do you want to talk to us about? Where are we going? I know I keep saying that over and over again, but it's, I still believe it very much. What are you trying to say here? What's going on? So. Yep. Yep. Yeah, and hear me, Frieda. I'm not saying that, oh, you know, as soon as things get a smooth part that we go, oh, what, you know, how can we mess this thing up in prayer? Not at all. You know, you want to enjoy those times, but. They can make us lax. And we're talking about kind of a cycle of revival and everything. Oftentimes we'll get to a place where God's really moving or things are happening, and you know, it's a marvelous season and we want to enjoy every bit of it. But if that begins to calcify and we begin to restrict or to put things onto that, then we can tend to move into almost a rebellious state where we're starting to say, well, you know, we prayed back then, all this good stuff's happening, so now I don't need to do that much anymore. And then you start to slide into that place, and then you see things falling apart. Sometimes the tendency is to blame other people or to blame God, you know, because things aren't going the way they should. But then you start to get together and cry out and say, you know, Lord, you know, we're slipping, we're sliding here. Come in, you know, show us what to do. And he's a God of infinite combinations. He'll tell us different things to do or move us along. He never leaves us in a static place, ever. No. So, again, I'm not suggesting that we become people that we're always like on the lookout for some awful thing, you know, to go on. Not at all. But that I think that he, as he's drawing us, like Rinda was speaking to us this morning, always drawing us, he wants to keep the pressure on us to keep cleaned up and everything. I'm not trying to glorify John and Carol Arnott and the Toronto Blessing, but the other thing that I've been very impressed with is that anybody on their leadership team, anybody who's either on their pastoral staff or their elder board or anything, the requirement is that at least once every 2 years that the elder and his spouse will do some kind of a course or a program like Restoring the Foundations or Ancient Paths or something to stay sharp and to submit themselves to make sure that their marriages are solid, to make sure that there's no hidden sin there. You know, they will go and put themselves in a place where they are inviting others to come and minister to them instead of them always doing the ministry. So that impresses me, you know, that's not an option. That if you're going to be a leader in this church, you are going to go somewhere or find somebody. You'll have a mentor. You will be in a prayer accountability kind of triad or dyad or whatever it is, just because they don't want anybody to go off the beam. And they believe that we need to be continually open to how God wants to address obstacles and hurts and difficulties in our life. Because we all have a long way to go. So, can we just... Let's just